Blog Talk Radio.
Peace to the ancestors. Yes. Peace to Dr. Cornell West. Yes. Peace to the movement. Yes. We came from the bottom. Ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind, and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob or slain. Now we locked up a game. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states, working your forms. Black nannies carrying white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your wars, but you'll never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong. You act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? You never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I wanna get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Get up, get up.
Might work, still a couple of quirks. Can't call it pancakes cause you pour some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the rodent's still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, races go. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland security now, there's a phenomenon. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Troops still riding, still obliging, still no Bin Laden. Tuned in waiting for the president's announcements. No 40 acres, take these 40 ounces. We ain't gon' get on the levees. Revolution televised early. Is you ready?
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
Forced to climb and shit and have your back, have you beat and lost your mind, especially when you done been down for so much time. Getting up don't even really ever cross your mind. You got porn shop, gun shop, liquor store sign, SWAT team, crack fiend, unemployed line. Stay late, dollar short, trying to buy time. What we do to survive is defined as a life of crime. You can't ball, then you forced to grind. If you fall, then you cross the line. And I've been putting in work from 9 to 5 and 5 to 9. Since phone calls cost a dime, what it made me is one of the relevant, highly intelligent. Brothers not only dealing with the same drugs, telling you if I'm a hustler, then what's more American? We all founded on the same drug
America,
heritage.
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
You know the black freedom movement, constitution, moral conscience. You know we've been trying to redeem the soul of the nation. Even as that nation been trying to render us soulless. But we are our soulful people, the blues people. We've been keeping alive the same banner of democracy. Thank God for those who came before. We shall never forget them and always move forward with grace and dignity.
America, why you wanna treat me so cold? America,
welcome to Dr. Mary Lee Live, and welcome back to all of our returning listeners. My name is Michael. I am a co-host of the show and a community advocate in the black community. And on tonight's show, we'll be discussing the topic of life-saving medical treatments in the time of COVID-19. And we'll be speaking with multiple medical professionals, some of which are regular contributors to the show, and one or two who might be joining us for the first time. So We want to welcome and thank our medical expertise on the panel for coming onto the show tonight. But before we get directly into the show, I'd like to allow for some of the other co-hosts to introduce themselves and give their introduction, and then we can get the show on to Dr. Lee and actually start it. So first and foremost, before we get into the show, is Ms. Annetta Jabari here?
I'm here. Thank you so much, Michael.
Absolutely.
And thanks for the gracious introduction to what this amazing radio program and broadcast has brought to so many homes across this country and around the world. I am honored working for many years alongside with James Cannon, Dr. Cannon, along with Nick Cannon, who we are fortunate enough to be able to take this initiative called the 400 Years of African American History. It's a initiative to support bringing awareness, letting us know as a people and a community what we have done and how we celebrate each other on the levels of, like with Dr. Mary Lee Live, with entrepreneurship. The opportunity came about because James Cannon had an amazing vision. He executed a partnership along with his son, Nick Cannon, and that allowed us all an opportunity to take a national position to bring awareness. And Michael, you have done a phenomenal job as a historian, bringing so much of our history to the forefront, along with Dr. Mary Lee and this show, Mary Lee Live, Dr. Mary Lee Live Show. So I would like to just say this is an honor and a privilege to be able to participate and to support this opportunity as we implement exposure and allow those in our communities and in the African-American community to support Dr. Mary Lee Live with the incredible 400 years of entrepreneurship. These platforms are made available to help bring and to solidify why it's necessary for us to work together on so many levels, from the medical position to educational platforms, all types of grants, things that we need as a people that we aren't exposed to without shows like this, Dr. Mary Lee Live, Michael Pine, Dr. Tatum. He's not with us this evening, but an incredible group that has been able to successfully done the longest running show that Blog Talk has presented based on African-American history. So we're very honored and excited. I know this has been a difficult time for many of us in this country with many, many family members, friends, and losses due to this COVID-19. So what I'm going to do is now take an opportunity not only to give our sincerest condolences to Dr. Mary Lee and her family with the loss they've just suffered, again with retrospect to the COVID-19, and there's so many death is death, but I tell you, it's even more horrendous when we have to face a situation that's out of our control in a lot of ways. So I'm going to take this opportunity to now pass this over, this mic over to Dr. Mary Lee, so that she can then reiterate what her purpose and her benefits are for bringing this to the platform as we support Nick Cannon and his father, Dr. James Cannon, and many others that have the same passion for making sure we are fully aware and understand much, much more than we have in the past for African-American history. So I'm going to hand this over to Dr. Mary Lee.
Thank you so much, Annetta. I certainly appreciate you and Michael and Dr. Tatum, who is not here. Dr. Tatum has been dealing with a medical issue, which he's recovering well from. And I also want to extend condolences to Dr. Tatum in the loss of his mother just a couple of days ago, 2 days ago. And so much is going on. It just seems like, you know, it's almost like an endless. And over the past year plus, time. And so we're praying for, you know, for everyone, for all of us who are suffering and grieving. In spite of everything that's going on, I'm here simply because I'm not feeling that I should be here, but at the same time, I feel that I should be here simply because But my brother just suffered at the hands of this systemic racist medical system is incomprehensible. It's just, I'm like, okay, God, how do I wrap my brain around what I just, you know, there are medical treatments that are available. We talked to the doctors. We had medical people to talk to our doctors to just give proper treatment. It was absolutely, we were absolutely refused. And so I'm here because I want people to be aware of what happened to us. God has given me a peace. I've been able to reconcile some within my spirit, and just because I do know God and I do know and understand, do know that though my brother's not here with us in the physical being, that his spirit is still alive, and that you know, I can feel his spirit. I can, and his spirit will always be with me. And so it gives me like it helps. I'll just say that much. It helps, and to give me strength to go on. I'm going to miss him, but I do want it to be known what happened. Not just only happening to but to others as well. My passion is entrepreneurship, and it has been for just forever. You know, entrepreneurship for every person in the universe, you know, particularly Black, so much was taken away from us, stolen from us, our identity, our names, our spirituality, was all stolen. It was just taken. We've been misfits. We've been called names that don't belong to us. We've been stripped of our confidence, you know, within ourselves, pleading and begging for handouts, just anything for an opportunity. But I'm a firm believer that unity, you know, we can come together, and that's part of the purpose of this show and business. If we can come together, the people, pool our skills, and you know, do entrepreneur and business amongst ourselves, we can bring about a change. Really owned or controlled, you know, 5 or 6 of the southern states, we would be able to control this country. And in so many ways, really, it takes unity. We have the money amongst ourselves. We have the skills. We have the know-how. I mean, there isn't anything that's being utilized today, whether it's in medicine, you know, our mathematicians, technology, food, clothing, everything, absolutely everything that exists, our knowledge, and who we are. I mean, we're the source, we're the being, and we always have been. And we need to operate our own schools, own our own hospitals. That's what it's about for me. And I'm committed for whatever days I have left here to develop and to build and use everything that I know, everything that I've experienced. And I've worked in corporate America 40 years. I've learned a lot. I know I've been places that the average one of us don't get to go. I've been inside of boardrooms. I've been there when our cities were, when the plans to for gentrifying our cities were taking place. And so, you know, I know what they did. I know how they took our money from us, but I know how we can get it back too. And I know how we can get funds that have been earmarked for us for many years, but been controlled by them. And so, but tonight, we're going to be talking about the treatments that are available, things that we can do. I don't know if, first, I think I want to do a roll call tonight to be sure that we have our guests on. And we're going to start with Dr. Hayden. I'm hoping your line is open, Dr. Hayden.
Dr. Cannon,
thank you. Yes, I can hear you. Cannon, how about if we come back to you once we do this roll call and try to get everybody lines open? How about that?
Beautiful, outstanding.
Okay, great. Okay, Dr. Longs, if you're here, will you please tap 1 on your phone? Press 1 on your phone. In fact, why don't all of our guests, Dr. Longs, Dr. Davis, Dr. Crawford, tap 1 on your phones. Dr. Tynes, tap 1 on your phones, please. Okay, here's one. Okay. 947-8260. Who do we have? Your last 4 digits of your phone number is 8260. You tapped 1. Okay. Okay, I'm hoping we can get everybody. I'm just asking you again to please tap 1 on your phone. Let's see, who is, okay. Okay, so we're gonna ask Dr. Cannon to come on in, and then we will go to, we want to hear from Dr. Hayden and Dr. Moncrief. Tap 1 if you're here, Dr. Moncrief. Tap 1 on your phone. Okay, Dr. Cannon, go ahead. Thank you.
Outstanding, everybody. You know, we're just trying to get everybody in. You know, just the technical part of hitting 1 on your phone. That way we can see that you want to get live, that you're one of the guests, and we'll make your microphone live. You know, tonight, you know, Dr. Lee, you know, as we think about a lot of things that's going on around the world and around this country, in our city. But then when we think about the things that's happening in our families where it's personal, you know, and sometimes we forget that we have people that we can reach out to and communicate with, and some of those are our family members. And, you know, opportunities like this, to have a show like this where people can call in from all over the country and just kind of share, where you give them beautiful opportunities to share from their hearts, to introduce themselves. You know, I just wanted to say tonight, you know, be comforted, y'all, because the Spirit of God, you know, has the ability to comfort us so that we can be in position to comfort other people. You know, and I know it's a bad scenario, but one person said, I was complaining because I had no shoes, and then I met someone that had no feet. And then, you know, it takes on a whole different paradigm. And, you know, life, you know, sometimes we just have to say, God, help us understand what we don't understand and help us see what we don't see, but we're going to keep trusting you. You know, sometimes we can't trust the criminal justice system, the medical system, but there's still a God when it's personal. And, you know, that's, you know, I just want everybody to be comforted tonight and go back to the beginning. They say to your first love, you know, and that is to dedicate to walk in love. You know, he that loves God loves other people, you know. So as God comforts us, he has an endless supply of comfort for us. But that's so that we can get built up, so that we don't stay in oppression or depression over things that we see, that our hearts don't fail us because things that we see. We let God comfort us so that we can be in position to comfort other people. And that's what this show is. Dr. Lee, your show is a comfort to those that listen week after week, you know, that take the time to tune in. You know, like myself, might not be here right on time, but I'm coming. Because it's a comfort to be able to come on Wednesday night in your peaceful spirit, giving everybody an opportunity to share, to moderate. It's outstanding. And I just want to say again tonight that I appreciate everybody that you bring as a guest. Been outstanding for this year and a half. And I appreciate every one of the hosts that you have hosting. They've been outstanding. Dr. Lee's been outstanding. I appreciate everybody tonight. Let's get into the show.
Thank you so much. Let's try it again. Okay. Okay. Which doctor is that? Last four digits of your number is 6885. Your life. Who do we have? Error code 248. Then 6885. Your line is open. Okay, who do we have? Okay. Don't know what's going on here tonight. I don't know what's going on. So we're going to move on to
They may have their phone unmuted. They have to unmute their phone also. So when you tell them they're live, they just have to unmute their phone and then start speaking.
Okay. Okay, so we're going to Dr. Hayden is not a medical doctor. Dr. Candace Hayden is the Senior Vice President of Technology for Hutchinson North America. She began her career in the Hutchinson Group in 2000 as the EDI Coordinator, Programmer Analyst, and has held IT Manager roles for Hutchinson Ceiling System, IT Director for Hutchinson Automotive North America. Dr. Hayden holds an A.S. in Computer Science, a B.A. in Visual Communications, and an M.I.T. in Internet Security. In 2014, Dr. Hayden completed her doctoral with a concentration in Organizational Development and Change. In addition to her role at Hutchinson, Dr. Hayden is an adjunct professor at Wayne State University, teaching in the Mike Ilitch School of Business. Dr. Hayden has a testimony that she's going to share with us, an experience that she has had during these times that we're in right now. So, Dr. Hayden, you do have the floor.
Thank you, Dr. Lee. And before I proceed, I'd like to extend my condolences to you and your family on the loss of your brother. And know that you have my prayers and love being extended out to your family. I also would like to thank you and your other co-hosts for this opportunity, as we're going to try this one more time, and hopefully the radio station won't decide that we need to be silenced again. for those who were on the call last week. Dr. Lee said, that I am not a medical doctor. I happen to be a doctor of management. And I come before you from the standpoint of one who has not have had COVID, but one who has suffered from the vaccine injury that is another portion of this whole pandemic that is not being highlighted, nor is there any concrete medical help available to those who are suffering from a vaccine injury. Vaccine injury is real. I was going to start off from that standpoint. On March 2nd and March 30th, I received my doses of Moderna. I will say that after the first injection, I did experience adverse side effects. Unfortunately, or fortunately for me at that particular time, I was not aware that there were side effects from the vaccination. Here in Michigan, we are using, we're using every facility to administer the vaccinations, and I happened to go to a fire station, which meant that I sat in my car for 15 minutes, and then after the 15 minutes, I was given the go-ahead to leave. During that 15 minutes, I just sat there. I didn't, I probably took a nap or something, but anyway, when I pulled off to leave, immediately my face started to tingle. My lips were so numb that if I would have looked at them, I would have thought that they were blue, and my fingertips were tingling. I actually laughed and said out loud, "Girl, get out of your head. Keep going. Get to your next destination." I was going to some store or something. So the next day, I had a sore left arm, which is the injection site. By the third day, everything was gone. Let's fast forward to March 30th. I received the second injection, and the next day, my left arm is sore, just like it was the first time, but from the injection site up to right up under the bottom of my left ear, it was so painful that I couldn't move my head left or right. In fact, at that point in Michigan, we were returning back to the offices, and that particular day I decided to work from home because I couldn't move my head left or right, so therefore I shouldn't be out trying to drive because you need your head to be able to move left and right. So I stayed home. By the next day, everything was gone. I was fine. We're going to fast forward 14 days later. I had a normal day, felt a weird pain in my back, shook it off. I happen to be an athlete, trained for triathlons all the time, didn't participate in any last year, but we kept in shape, we kept going. So a pain to an athlete is like a good day. So I felt that pain, kept going, didn't think anything of it. Came home, laid on the floor, was watching television, fell asleep. And when I woke up, I went to stand up. And at that particular point, I had no legs. From my chest down to the bottom of my feet, I didn't even know any body parts existed. I couldn't feel them. If when I tried to stand, it was like trying to stand up a six-month-old. Once you thought that they were stable, you let them go. You know how a six-month-old just falls to the floor? That was the reaction that I got from my body. We go to ER. I'm not going to give you all the details. I did that the last time, but we go to ER. 3 days later, I get an MRI. I'm admitted to the hospital from the ER visit. I get an MRI. The surgeon that had been assigned to my case, because I'm assuming they thought there was something wrong with my spine, the surgeon comes in and says, "There is absolutely nothing on your MRI. We don't know what's wrong with you. We're going to turn your case over to an internist." Internist for 3 days tells me that he has no clue and he doesn't know what to do. And upon the third day, my mother rose up in me, and I told that particular internist that he needed to find somebody that knew what to do, because at this point, I've been laying in the bed for 5 days with no medical care except for him to tell me he doesn't know what to do. By now, I'm getting frustrated. They're getting frustrated. They get a neurologist in who does an examination, and he's like, "I have no clue what's going on with you, but we're going to do some more MRIs." And at this time, the first MRI was thoracic. This time they do cervical and my brain. Comes back, nothing. They attempt to do a spinal tap because the neurologist assumes that what I have is transverse myelitis. They do a spinal tap, but there is no signs of inflammation in my body. I had every test known to man, a CT. I don't know the medical phrase, but it's the CT that will produce bubbles if you have had a blood clot. And there were no bubbles produced from my heart, so therefore no blood clot. I had another CT that also came back negative. Absolutely nothing. I spent 26 days in the hospital, pretty much was told by every doctor just to be used to being handicapped because I could seek second opinions, but there would be no opinion other than what they had come up with, which was nothing. I continually began to ask, okay, so if you can't find anything wrong with my body, could this be a result of the vaccination? I had one physician tell me straight in my face, oh, it was too long ago. Well, by the time he came back the next day, I had done my research, and research told me through the CDC that it was 90 days that a negative reaction could occur. I also was able to find, while I was in the hospital, other people in the same hospital that had the same reactions that I was having, and also being told nothing was wrong with their body. The doctors refused to bring all doctors together so that we could all figure out what was going on. And I also found two people, one in Philadelphia, one in Cleveland, Ohio, I believe it was, who had news reports on them because they had had adverse side effects to the vaccination. One took Pfizer, one took Moderna, and the next day or within days, they were paralyzed. Wow, that sounds just like my case, so I bring it to my doctor, who tells me that he's not even going to consider calling those hospitals because every patient is an individual. Again, I spent 26 days in the hospital. We won't go over the rest of my nightmare because I was refused treatment for physical therapy, pretty much just a run of the mill. Where I want to go with this tonight is after last week's conversation, I sent Dr. Lee an email, and I hesitated to send the email because I didn't want to come off as if I was that angry black woman that we get so much, we're coined to be, but it just started to occur to me that in my circle, I know no other African-American who has had the negative side effects that I've had, just in my circle, and I am in contact with over 1,500 people who have suffered this, and I'm not going to say I'm the only African-American, but I'm the only one that I know of. And several people have contacted me from different news medias that I've been on, but I've never been contacted by another African-American. And it just behooves me to say that I know I'm not the only one. And I know from a medical perspective, this is not something that we really want to recognize. But given the way that I was treated in the hospital, and I will say that none of my doctors looked like me, but given the fact of how I was treated and how I had to become an advocate for myself and how I had to start putting things together and asking questions, I can understand why I haven't been approached by another African American, because we have no clue what's going on. And if there's not a voice for us, this is going to get worse for us. COVID is already worse for us. And I am not an anti-vaxxer. Yes, the vaccine works, but there's a particular part of the population that it is detrimental for. People have died from this. Paralysis is not the worst thing, and it's affecting kids. I know personally a child that was in the Pfizer clinical trial who is worse off than I am. She can't even move her head right now today. I've been going through this for 135 days, She suffered from this back in January and is still suffering from it. And if I know of one kid, I know that there's more. We have got to do something, and our voices have to be heard. Dr. Lee, hopefully
Thank
that was
you.
The way you wanted me to go this morning, this evening.
Absolutely. On this show, you speak your heart. You know, we talk until they shut us down. And if they have to shut us down every week, we'll get shut down every week. So, no, absolutely. This is so very important, and you can't overly stress, and I can't overly stress, none of us can, that this information needs to be out. We need to be talking about what is actually going on amongst us, what we are experiencing. And the truth of the matter, I do believe we've got Dr. Don Tynes on, so we can go over to Dr. Tynes, you know, for a response.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Lee, and you're right, and thank you for Dr. Harden, and Dr. Hayden, I actually apologize for the behaviors and the treatment that you receive from individuals who are supposed to be physicians. The facts are that the bitter fact that I can speak to based on 7 cases, 6 different cities, and my uncle being one, and Dr. Lee's brother being one of the other cases, that the pattern that is emerging is similar to what we saw in 2019, 2020, and we again saw in 2021. That when it came to the African-American, that COVID wasn't killing the African-American. COVID was not killing black people. What's killing black people is the racism that's subconscious, that's conscious, that's in the heart of the physician. Because racism is one of the mainstays in the field of medicine. Medicine is one of the last resorts to be recognized as a place of opportunity and of privilege and of status and highly protected, and most blacks have to whiten up instead of academically tighten up to become physicians. So most of your black physicians are going to be black skinned, but white mentality. Their minds are going to be manufactured in European America or in Europe. If they come from overseas like Nigeria, their minds are manufactured in Europe. In other countries, their minds may be manufactured in France, like if you came from Cameroon. So the behaviors of withholding treatment to the last minute is a pattern that we've seen. The medicines that they're talking about that for early intervention need to be given within 48 to 72 hours. Senate testimony now has been made available, and it shows that there are doctors like Mayo Clinic, like Baylor Medical Center, like Dr. Peter McClaw, who's the top doctor in the United States. That's Peter, last name is capital M, little c, capital C, U-L-L-O-U-G-H, and I repeat it because it's just that important. Peter, last name, capital M, little c, capital C, U-L-O-U-G-H, M-D. He's the top doctor in the United States, over 600 publications. He specialized in cardiology and nephrology in terms of the kidney heart disease. And he became the leading physician in the United States for the American government on COVID. And so he represents America's world authority. And they actually, the media actually attacks him because he developed protocols that's keeping people alive. And there are other doctors who developed programs, IV vaccine, to keep people alive. So the problem that we have is that we have doctors who have been so conditioned by racism, systemic racism, that they see black life as not a value. And it's a retaliation, I think, for this whole Black Lives Matter, because what happened with Dr. Lee and my uncle was that the treatment was held when it was past the line of where the drug could actually work. then it was offered, but it had to be fought for, demanded for, where others of could be from European heritage are given opportunities earlier to receive the medicine. So that's what we see now. So that's also why Rachel Lindsay, the CDC director of the health of the CDC, which is the Center for Disease and Control. I'm sorry, I'm just rushing. For the CDC Department, Center for Disease and Control, where she said that it's a public health threat, that racism is a public health threat to black people because it's killing them, it's taking their lives. We saw it initially as a public health crisis, but there were no efforts and no protocols, nothing put in place to actually deal with the racism in America, to deal with the racism in medicine. And so what doctor had, what she had experienced was that, one, she was an African-American female, and Dr. Lee's brother was in the same hospital that killed the black doctor. So you being in this hospital, coming down with it, and then there's a mandate of not to treat. There's a mandate that was kind of written down not to treat, especially as an outpatient, but to let the patient get in a bad enough shape to go into the hospital, and depending on where you were, depending on what type of treatment that you would have. The other thing is that there was a law breaking. By law, every physician who may encounter an adverse drug reaction, adverse virus reaction, is to report that to the FDA, through, in this particular case, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting Agency. We are obligated reporters, like you have to report child abuse, like you have to report a rape or report a human trafficking. You are supposed to report if you see a vaccine injury, a drug injury. You're mandatory to report. That law is being broke. Hospitals are intimidating doctors not to make those reports. The report takes over 30 minutes, and you're supposed to be a medical professional who fill it out. And it's designed for doctors and hospitals and nurses to fill out, not generally the lay public. That's why 85% of all the reporting of the vaccine adverse event, what you call VAERS, is by doctors and nurses and hospitals. So the next thing is that, is there treatment? Yes, there's treatment, but that treatment is being fought against because for some reason that there's this love with Pfizer that to promote this vaccine. The Mayo Clinic, that's right, Mayo Clinic, top medical research facility in the United States, the top, reviewed the efficacy of the workingness of the Pfizer and of Moderna and found that Moderna came at 76% and Pfizer came at a whopping low 42%. Pfizer came at 42%. If you look at the journal called the New England Journal of Medicine, you'll see that in the Pfizer study, there was only 8 people that was given the vaccine, and that's why it had a 95% efficacy. It was only 8 people given the vaccine. That's why it had a 95% of efficacy in making the symptoms less, not preventing transmission, not preventing them from disease, but making the symptoms less. And that's what it was given 95% for. But the reality was that its effectiveness, what they call efficacy, is only 42%. That's why it needs 3 and 4 boosters to try to get it. And for the layperson, I make it make sense for you. If you go to the Secretary of State to get a driver's license and you take the written exam and you score a 42% on the written exam test, will you walk away with a license from the Secretary of State? The answer is no. So it makes no sense medically, scientifically, for this vaccine of Pfizer to actually been given a license when its efficacy is only 42%. If you were trying to do something, you would have given it to Moderna at 70%. And then the other thing that has to be explained is why that Novavax and Sinovac and these other regular vaccines that they developed last year that actually treats COVID better by letting their own body immune system produce antibodies to fight it. Why have they given authority where Pfizer can shut them down and make them sit on the shelves until like December or whatever, to be, and not be released to the general public. If you're truly about trying to vaccinate the American public, you would allow all the vaccines to be available, not the genetic modifying vaccines of the messenger RNA type or the DNA type, but you can use the regular vaccines, which is just like a flu vaccine, which is the Novavax, and the other ones that you just give a dead particle to up into the person or a dead piece of protein to the into the person, and the body will do the rest. It won't take over the body, just the body will do the rest. So there's the media is too heavily involved. Businessmen are too heavily involved. Physicians are not doing this. And every physician that you see that's supporting business, you need to make a note. We need to take pictures of them because we know that they are anti-black, that they are anti-African-American, that they are anti-Africa, and they are anti-medicine, and they are not true physicians. They are businessmen disguising as physicians, or the Satanists disguising as physicians, because our first goal as physicians is to do no harm. Our next goal is to help a patient by any means necessary, to help a patient. And these individuals who lie and who never have even treated a COVID patient are giving advice. Dr. Fauci has never treated a COVID patient. Dr. Fauci has never touched a COVID patient. But these, and the other thing you need to know, that we as doctors, we have a panel, a team that goes and present findings. We never have one individual, one dictator, no one grand poobah to lead. So there is no head man that's over the COVID. So these things have misled the public, and then the public have need to know that anybody who tells them that they should take it is no good, is a bastard or a B.I.T. because anyone is not a Christian. I'm calling them, they're not a Christian because it's devilish when you offer drugs, marijuana. It's devilish when you alcohol, when you beer. It's devilish when you offer lottery tickets. It's devilish when you offer guns in Kentucky. It's devilish when you offer people chicken dinners to take a drug or to take a vaccine. None of that is Christian behavior. None of that can be coming from the God Almighty.
I just want one clarification here. So you said that there is a vaccine that that will not destroy your own immune system, but will help your own immune system to fight off this virus.
There are actually over four of them that are available. The number one that's produced by America is called Novavax, which is sitting on a shelf. I've tried to order it, and right now they have it on hold. And the hopefully the release date is December, but there is no reason why it should be held. There is no reason why this German company should have the rights to keep other vaccines, other drugs off the market. There has to be an investigation or an explanation. We do know that the Pfizer company had bullied and threatened smaller countries to give up embassies, to give up military bases, to put mortgages on their government funds in order to get the Pfizer vaccine, which is now we found only 42% effective. We know we have a document that Pfizer did these misdeeds. So why is it that Pfizer is allowing people to die, or why is it they're trying to make a Pfizer drug mandatory when it's 42%, when it's comparative to Moderna is 76%? So it cannot be about you trying to help America. There has to be another agenda behind this.
And they're offering beer to people to take it. They're offering
marijuana.
They're offering money. They're offering extra incentives to the hospitals and to the doctors
to
take it. So go ahead, Dr. Cannon. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Put on the table with that. And I'd like any of the guests to speak on this. They don't have to do it immediately, but any time in the conversation. It looks like it's coming to where people may have to, some jobs are saying, if you don't take this vaccine, then we're not saying you're fired, but we're saying that you can't continue. They will fire you. My question is, what recourse is that legal at this point, and can that company that demands you to take any of those vaccines that's still in the practice state, the experiment state, and if that company demands you with the duress of being fired, then can that company be liable?
Dr. Hayden. EAU vaccinations cannot be mandated, so that is why they rushed to get Pfizer approved. And if you watch the news today, Moderna will soon be approved. Now, once they're approved, because private businesses can state their own rules, and if you watch President Biden, he has said from his cockpit, I'll say, that he needs the private businesses to support requiring vaccination for employment. And since it's a private business, it'll be hard-pressed for someone to sue.
He's offering them hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Let me get the facts right. Okay, so here, and I also will. I want everybody to get a pencil and paper so that they can write this information down of a contact source. Here are the in terms of the legal fact, the legal law. So number one, what was said is that initially, they're experimental, but once they become licensed, two things happen. As experimental, there's no recourse because it's experimental, so no company, no person could be held liable. Once the drug becomes licensed, the drug company cannot be held liable, but you can actually go to the pharmacy court, which is called the vaccine court or drug court, and try to plead your case, which in most cases they fail because it's the drug industry that's running the court, but some people are successful winning. So you can go to the vaccine court. So that's because that's what you can do for Pfizer. You can't do it for Moderna yet until it becomes licensed. Then there's supposed to be some recourse. Now, the legal aspect, this is very, very important for everyone. Number one, do not quit. Number one, do not quit. Number one, do not resign from your job. The law requires that you be injured. The law requires that you be injured, that you be fired. And then when you're fired, you have a case and you can have restitution. Now, constitutional law, federal law, Supreme Court law, all of that is still the same. And what was being said, there's three cases that came out, not just the Nuremberg, but there's a second case plus the case that was that was recent in the 1950s. The 1950s, in terms of the sterilization of black women in particular and of the handicapped or those who were considered mentally retarded to that effect, that was illegal. Those three events caused these laws to be on the books that prevent forced medication, forced vaccination, forced sterilizations. That is on the federal books. Lower courts can break the law and do things, and that's why it's appealed up to the higher court, which must use constitutional law. And sometimes it may take up to a year or two before it gets there. So constitutionally, legally, it is correct that they cannot force you. Businesses cannot force you. They cannot override the federal law or Supreme Court law, but they can make it difficult. But if you take the vaccine because you're coerced or forced and you sign, you give up your rights. It's going to be very harder to fight it. But if you say, I'm being forced to take this vaccine, you write that down, you have it notarized by your bank or someone that that you're being forced by your job to take this vaccine and that you hold your company or business responsible for any hurt, harm, or death that occurs, that you hold that company responsible for any hurt, harm, or injury that occurs. And if you take the vaccine, you do not sign, you have your statement, You say, look, nope, I'm not signing. The company's forcing me to do this. You take the vaccine. Any hurt or harm comes, they are held liable. So that becomes a legal document because you are coerced and forced, and the law is on your side against that. But you cannot do it if you resign. So that's the trick. They want people to resign because then you have no legal recourse. And some of the PR persons be trying to lie. And one was trying to do that in front of my face, but she knew she couldn't, so she kind of implied it, try to be trickery. So those are the facts. Now, there's a group of lawyers, nationwide Christian lawyers, that are providing this information and are taking cases and referring individuals. So right, here we go, https://liberty, LIBERTY, and health, health, .org. Again, I'll repeat, https://, LIBERTY, health, .org. Now the next one, it's the same one, this is in a, and this talks about exemptions. So https://, liberty, LIBERTY, and health, health, dot org, now, /exemption, exemption, hyphen, resources, resources, /. Again, https://, LIBERTY, dot org/exemption, resources. Those are lawyers. That's the legal aspect. The media and others are giving disinformation. So the number one fact is, one, you cannot be coerced or forced. Two, that there's three federal laws that relate to three different cases of abuse this way that has been stand up in court, and the Supreme Court will overrule anything that comes from the lower court as well as the higher court. So what these hospitals have done has been illegal because it's been the personal opinion of the judge and not the statement of law. So it has not been a statement of law, a statement of fact, but an opinion of a judge. Those could eventually be thrown out. Third part is do not quit. Let them fire you so that you can be compensated because then you have recourse, and then you can also join in a major class action lawsuit to get some type of relief from what you're going through. And four, this is also a nationwide movement, and you have these lawyers here that can help you with people locally or, internet-wise. So those are the facts. The drugs are being licensed, but the drugs now can be taken the vaccine course, and you can file charges. But, again, there's an exemption that protects the pharmaceutical companies. It does not protect businesses. The laws does not protect businesses. The laws do not protect businesses. The businesses are now trying to get some kind of protection from this because if they mandate the flu shot, they mandate the COVID, and you become hurt and you say that you were forced to take this and you did not sign, then you can sue their butts. Just make it that simple. Do not sign.
But in the best situation, you want them, when they give you that mandate that you got to take this or don't come back to work, then you got to give them a mandate by your attorney in the best situation, saying that I will take this, but you as my company, you will be made liable, and I need you to sign that.
They're not going to sign that. You just have to provide that documentation. You provide the documentation that you're being coerced. That's a legal document that you have notarized by your bank or your person, that they are coercing you, forcing you to do that. The other thing is that
I present that to them and they don't sign that document, If I present to my employer, if I say to my employer, I'm going to go take this vaccine, but I need you to sign here with the understanding of my attorney that if anything happened, you know no. that I'm going to take you liable, because they're doing that at the rest of your job. To put
yeah,
your
they,
livelihood
they're,
on
they're
the
not,
table.
By law, they're not obligated to sign it. Now, the thing you can also need to know is that, other thing you need to know is that religious exemption, you do not have to explain yourself on a religious exemption. You have to state that this is by your faith. Now, the only problem where you could be contested, if you've been a full of crap Christian, then all of a sudden now you talking that you a Christian and everybody knows you drink, you smoke, you cuss, you do everything else and don't look nothing like a Christian, and now you kind of trying to claim a religious exemption. That's the only time you can be called out, and that could be a problem where they can get you, you know, for lying. But if you carry yourself respectable and nobody knows what your faith is, you don't have to tell them what your faith is. All you have to do is say claim a religious exemption, and that, you know, and if they and if you have behaviors that are respectable,
they have,
and that
they
the
have,
court
they
has
have
to honor that. It could be Christian, it could be Baptist, Kojic, Seventh-day Adventist, it could be Muslim, it could be, you know, Hare Krishna, whatever, but that's still under federal law.
Does that shut down my conversation from my employer? If my employer say, no, everybody else taking this, I know you got this religious thing, but, you know, I still want you to take, does he have to, by law, handle me different, and what is those laws? Once I claim my
religion, the law is that you test, the law is testing or vaccinating. By law, they have to have a mechanism in place, and that's what companies got in trouble with, that they wanted to force vaccination, but they did not have an alternative, and the law is clear that you have to have an alternative. So it's testing or vaccinating. And what the companies have now learned is that the law had told them, no, you cannot just force vaccination. You have to give them the option of testing. And what the companies are retaliating and saying, okay, if that's the case, they have to pay for their own testing.
Okay, and I want to come in here. Okay, so Dr. Cannon, to the statement regarding a document. Now, first of all, I need to let everyone know that we don't have any lawyers on the line right now. And I'm not a lawyer. However, I'm a paralegal. Okay. And I don't know if we've got any HR people on the line. If so, feel free to tap one and chime in. But just from my own experiences in the law firm as a paralegal, this document, this exemption document, can be an affidavit. Notarized. This isn't something that you will ask your employer to sign and agree to. This is just your statement. This is your statement that you leave with them. The Health and Human Services, they within their department, there's some department, I don't know if it's within their social, the Health and Human Services, I do know of a situation, and this was a family member who she didn't want her children to be vaccinated for school, and so she got a form, and I do believe it was from HHS, which she filled out, and it was notarized and signed, and she was able to take that form to her school and to the public school system and have her children exempt from immunizations. And this is the type of form or document that you can present to your employer. Whether or not it will, you know, carry you all the way through a lawsuit for you to be compensated, I don't know. But it is something that if you want to leave with your employer, that's something that Dr. Tynes here is saying that you can do. I do want to ask our listening audience to tap one on your phone for any comments or questions. I do would like to go to back to Dr. Hayden. Dr. Hayden, you were speaking, and these are responses to your remarks, and so we'd like to come back to you. Want to be sure that you finish your statements and your thoughts at this point right here, and then we're going to go to we're going to go to our other co-host, Michael.
Dr. Moncrief.
Is Dr. Moncrief on?
Yes.
Okay, great, awesome. So, okay.
Thanks, Dr. Lee. There's only two things that I'd like to interject with, but thank you, Dr. Tang, for the additional clarification. The vaccine court that you're referring to, I just want to interject for the audience that is the court if you have been vaccine injured. There are two courts that you could go through that take forever, and right now there's legislation to usurp the CIP court for COVID-19 vaccination and go directly to the VICP court, which awards more money and takes less time, and you're also able to have an attorney represent you, as opposed to the other court, no attorneys are allowed. And in addition, Dr. Tynes, from the information that you've given our audience, most people faced with their job aren't going to understand some of their rights. It's awesome that we're able to provide this information, and I think if you grew up in my era, our parents always told us, don't sign nothing. Don't
Amen.
Sign anything until you understand and you get clarification, and also have an attorney on speed dial. You have to, because these HR, we all work in, or have worked in areas. HR is not for you, it's for the company. Let's not be fooled. It's for the company, and all they're going to do is try to enforce what they've been told to be enforced. Don't sign nothing. Tell them to fire you. If they fire you, then, you've got all the recourses at your disposal, but it's going to take time, and it's going to be frustrating because doors are going to be closed, but that doesn't mean that they're closed permanently. And, Dr. Tynes, you have given some very important information, and thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I do want to give you a phone number. This phone number, if you missed anything, any information tonight or have any questions, you can text 571-998-1964 questions or comments or more information regarding entrepreneurship or any conversation on this show tonight. Again, that number is 571-998-1964, as well as to get in touch with any of the doctors or here on our show. Okay, so I want to come back to Michael, but we've got two more doctors on now from our original guest list. We have Dr. Moncrief, who has joined us. And we also have Dr. Crawford. Dr. Moncrief, we're going to ask you. Dr. Moncrief is the president of Moncrief and Associates, LLC, and associate professor of pediatrics at Wayne State University School of Medicine in Detroit, Michigan, and the historian of Hartford Memorial Baptist Church. Dr. Moncrief attended Harvard University in Boston, where she earned a master's degree in public health and was one of the first three persons to complete the Harvard Commonwealth Fund Fellowship in Minority Health Policy and one of the first two candidates to complete a field internship in health policy at Health Resources and Services Administration. Dr. Marquise has served on the faculty of Wayne State University and Harvard University. Welcome, Dr. Marquise, and the floor is yours.
Well, thank you very much for having me on again tonight. I wanted to just think about, have us think about some of the things that are going on and why we're being asked to do the things we're being asked to do. For example, why are we being asked to, or not necessarily being asked, but being told to send our children back to school, even though we see the incidence of the Delta strand of the COVID virus increasing, and we see that children are vulnerable to this disease. And even though we've seen that last year around this time when COVID first emerged, that children did not seem to carry a heavy burden of disease with COVID. And then why are we being told to go to work, or I'm sorry, to get the vaccine in order to hold our jobs? Not being asked, but being told that. And, you know, why is legal system supporting this? So let's you know, just to think about it, you know, there is no rationale currently to justify forcing our children to go to school in a time when the COVID virus is becoming more prevalent. It's just not common sense. And to force our children to get a vaccine is not making common sense either. When we haven't shown that the vaccine will help prevent our children from getting these infections. The data, the information just isn't there. So that's what we have to think about as we are forcing our children to go back into an environment where it's not safe for them. And so all that I can say is if you are and you feel that you have no option, keep training your child, encouraging your child to wear a mask and to wash their hands in a safe distance from other students and from the teacher. Being forced to go back to work, people need their jobs. And when you get that option, you know, get vaccinated or don't come to work, what's the advantage of you getting vaccinated? The people who are forcing vaccination on you believe, most of them truly believe, that the vaccine is going to keep you healthy. It's going to help by keeping you healthy. It's going to cut down on you acquiring the COVID virus, and therefore you will not be able to spread the COVID virus to others in your workplace. And so they'll be able to have a workforce, a healthy workforce. And they truly believe that. I don't think anybody believes that forcing you to get a vaccination in your workplace is going to force you to have one of those bad side effects from the vaccine. That's not their rationale. They believe the vaccine truly works, and they believe the vaccine is safe. So how do you fight something that people think is good for you, even though we know that they don't have all the information when they're making this decision? I think you have to fight it in the courts. You have to decide whether or not taking the vaccine is worth you losing your job. If you can afford to get it, another job or not to go to work at that job, then the vaccine. Take the loss of the job invest in trying to get some type of class action lawsuit to help fight the being forced to get the vaccine. But if you have to work, and a lot of us do have to work in order to eat, then you're faced with something totally different. If you have a primary care physician, go to your primary care physician and ask them for that letter, that statement saying that you should not be able to take, you should not take the vaccine. Because of HIPAA, you don't have to disclose, and one of the other guests can correct me if I'm stating something wrong. When a physician fills out a form saying, you know, for you to be off of work, they cannot put down the diagnosis as to why. That's privileged. So if you have your physician giving you an exemption for COVID, they don't have to put down, to my knowledge, the reason why. They just have to give you an exemption. That's another option that you have. So back in the beginning of this COVID epidemic, I was not for the vaccine because it just had not been proven, had not been tried, and I was not going to let people experiment on it. Coming forward to today, when I see the number of people who have died from COVID and I see the number of people who have gotten the vaccine, I'm even more committed to this should be an individual choice. The vaccine has been around now, and there is evidence that the vaccines are working. There's a lot of evidence that we don't have the full information behind it. But if you're not immunocompromised, I think, well, I'm not as strong against people getting the vaccine, particularly when I've seen firsthand people who have died from COVID. And I think Dr. Tynes used to say it, the grave don't lie. So there's decisions that we have to make. We make those decisions not based on our emotions. We make those decisions based on what's best for us as individuals. We make the decision what's best for our children. And today, the evidence just is not there supporting vaccinating our children. The evidence is there today supporting our children should not be forced to go to school. And if they are in environments, then they should be wearing their mask. They should be safe distancing. Thank you.
I
must interject 2 points here. One, that in terms of the vaccines, in terms of efficacy, the Mayo Clinic just showed, Dr. Moncrief wasn't there, Mayo Clinic went over the data and showed that the Pfizer vaccine efficacy was not 95%, even though in a study the vaccine was only given to 8 people in the study group, and it had 162 people in the placebo group, and the study is stated the goal was not to prevent transmission, the goal was not to prevent death, but was to decrease the symptoms. Mayo Clinic went and reviewed it and found that the efficacy of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine to be only 42% effective. So the efficacy is only 42%. Moderna did still hold at 76%. Moderna held at 76%. Number two, the number of deaths, if we follow the CDC, when the first signal came out in January 22nd, the vaccine actually had killed 182 people. They also studied the time of death, and the time of death that there were a significant number the second day is when they had the most highest number of deaths after the vaccine, and then it waned after that point. The next thing is just recently when they looked at the vaccine on July 30th, they found that it had now went up to 12,000 deaths in the United States alone, 12,366 deaths, and the review of the studies showed that 86% of the deaths had no other explanation than the vaccine. I've lost an uncle to COVID. I've treated people daily who have been injured by the vaccine. I know that 3 weeks out, if they can survive that, then they'll be okay. But if I look and say, okay, if I don't want to just look at deaths, if I want to look at how many people were hospitalized, that's 46,000 people who've been hospitalized. How many people went to urgent care? Over 68,000 people went to urgent care. How many office visits for COVID? Over 92,000 visits for that. How many miscarriages? How many, you know. So the vaccine has problems, and the monitoring body is saying that the vaccine may even be causing injury. They also knew that early on that the vaccine was accumulating in the ovaries and the testicles. Now that's been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt. So they have other vaccines like the Novavax that we mentioned earlier tonight that doesn't use the genetic modification of the body, that's safer if people want to do a vaccine. That's still being held up on the market. It's ready to go. They just have to be released to the general public. The thing for the children, this first variant, the alpha variant, and even the alpha and the beta, gamma, those other variants did not affect children. Their immune system was so strong, so it was 0.00001% chance of a child getting the COVID vaccine and dying. Taking care of children right now who are COVID survivors, but the immune compromised, the obese, for some reason this has been modified where those children are going to be singled out and can come down with the illness. And what you would look for is reddening of the palms or the feet, reddening of the tongue, reddening of the eyes. So red eyes, red hands, it should sound the alarm. Red eyes, red hands should make you a demand that the person, that child be treated, looked at for COVID. So the scientific data is going against this form of vaccine, and that yes, some people survived it, but people died from it, and you cannot trivialize their deaths, you cannot trivialize their injuries. And when you take a perspective like that, that's a business perspective, and that's what separates the physician from the business person, because every life is precious, every injury is serious to that person. So you don't, the last thing I'll say is that reviewing the data, the FDA guidelines are that when 5 deaths occur from any drug or vaccine, that signal is called a signal, and that drug comes under investigation. If that drug causes 25 deaths, 5 give you a black box warning, 25 deaths have you removed from the market. 25 deaths have you removed from the market. In January 22nd of 2021, we went past the 25 standard and had 182 deaths for the vaccine. And there was no pulling of the vaccine. Even though the request went in Europe, there was no pulling. As of July 30th, 12,366 died. Dr. Moncrief is in Detroit. Tommy Hearns, good friends of Marvin Hagler, who I think it was, took the vaccine and immediately had problems. And family was attacked for saying that don't be blaming the vaccine. There, anytime somebody says this vaccine is pure, clean, it's from God, then you know that's the devil speaking, because it's past 25 deaths, it's 12,366 deaths, and that's still climbing. So there's a safer vaccine alternative. And remember, before we had the vaccine, we had started having the lowest number of COVID by doing the washing our hands, well, mask up, glove up, safe up. We did the mask up, glove up, safe up, kept our distance, kept the fresh air open and going. We were beating COVID without the vaccine. And then there was a public shift in December just to go vaccine crazy, just to go vaccine crazy. So forcing the vaccine says there's something wrong with the makers and the people of the vaccine. That's, and that last part is just my opinion, not based on science, but the fact that this is not a normal promotion. It's non-medical, and that the experts that were just exposed in the Senate hearings, that the people who you've been listening to as the experts who have been fighting the early treatment, not one of them, not even Fauci, not one of them, not Dr. Yar, none of them guys have treated a single COVID patient. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Tynes. Dr. Jewel, yeah.
One more point on the medical exemptions. States are passing laws, and Oregon has already passed the law that the only medical exemption that you can get for the COVID-19 vaccination is anaphylactic reaction. Mm. Oregon has already passed the law, and there are several other states trying to pass that same law. So they're trying to block the medical exemption.
I have to jump in. She's right, but the thing is, in Michigan, and what I have to correct Dr. Moncrief, it is not a letter. What it is a form that your company gives you to bring to your doctor. And one of the universities in particular, like I think Eastern Michigan or Michigan State, tried to have it where it had to do directly relate to some of the products or something like that of the vaccine. At the particular time when I filled out that form, Pfizer was not, there was not a licensed vaccine. So that was the push that people were filling it out because you cannot do experimental drugs, and that's why the rush, the push there. Now, the other thing you need to know that that I just found out from the Senate was that the funding from the CDC is no longer fully from the federal government. The funding for the CDC now comes from the pharmaceutical industry and businessmen. One of the largest funders is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, followed by several pharmacy companies, including Pfizer. That's why you have the CDC being bipolar and saying one thing and coming back and changing it, because it's no longer fully independent anymore.
Thank you.
And can I just ease in? Before our next speaker, just, okay, the point that I'm trying to make is that everybody should have the information when they decide whether or not to get the vaccine. People should say that they're not going to get the vaccine because, you know, so on. Okay, 12,000 people, you know, have died from the vaccine. And you got over 1 million people have died from COVID, okay? It's a decision, and I'm speaking from a person, and I'll just tell you, I have not received the vaccine, okay? But I'm making my decision for me based on what I think is the best thing for me. But I don't walk around every day out there, and I'm not forced to go to work in an environment where people are coming in COVID. You have to make that decision for yourself. You look at the data. You look how people have done with the vaccine that's available, and you look at can you wait until the vaccine that you want to take gets on the market. Or do you not want to take a vaccine at all, no matter what they come out with? That's how you make your decision. You don't get caught up in the hype, the government and the media is pushing on us, you know, to get the vaccine. You don't get caught up in that hype.
Right, but they're saying take away choice, take away choice, take away rights, take away choice. That's what you don't have a choice.
Bottom line is you still
right.
It's up to the individual to decide whether or not they want the vaccine. And as doctors, we have
they're
to
trying to strip that choice.
We have
and,
to
and
stand
doctors
up
are being penalized if they
We have to protect our patients. If our patient says they do not want the vaccine, we have to work with that patient to get that patient that exemption. We shouldn't stand there and debate whether or not, you know, they have the correct credentials to get that exemption. We as
and
doctors,
I totally agree with you, but I have to also side with Dr. Times because they are, and I can put you in touch with a physician. They are threatening you all's licenses for writing these exemptions.
That's
so this
correct.
Is going, you know, this is going far past our choices because they are not only threatening the individual, but for every individual that can help another individual, there's a penalty if you help that individual.
And the physician, again, have to be strong enough to stand up and say the NMA, the AMA, all these organizations that physicians pay dues to and they have one of those guys, lobbyists, you know. They have to
Dr.
stand
Moncrief,
up and they have to fight. You know, you don't
the federal government has made the federal government has made donations to all of those bodies that you said.
You don't
to,
just
and,
sit down and
but they were,
say,
they were donated
oh,
to
well,
defend,
we can't
to
win
decrease.
Because the federal government has given money to these people. If you are a doctor, you need to have a backbone. If your doctor doesn't have a backbone, then you need another doctor. If you don't want to get the vaccine and your doctor will not support you in not getting the vaccine, you need to find another doctor. Your doctor is supposed to take care of your health. They're not supposed to take care of what the government needs. We don't live in communist Russia.
Or Germany.
We don't, but they're sure enough trying to make it that way.
Right,
and we have to fight.
Dr. Moncrief, I'm actually getting patients who are firing their doctors to come to me because for me to fill the paperwork out. So what you don't know is that even the NMA received monies to support the vaccine under the guise of decreasing vaccine hesitancy. So all these organizations have received either millions of dollars or $500,000 for this. So people are being bought. The faith system, a faith-based initiative, have been supplying money to the churches. So this is not a normal thing that's going on right now. What you're saying is correct morally, but what we're saying, the reality is that it's totally opposite. There's no choice. Jobs are being on the line, threatening, and you know that a hospital employee physician, that a physician that works for a hospital, has no say so, has no voice. It has to be the CEO, COO, CMO.
That's because the physicians have given away their voices. The physicians have to take their voices back. The only way the physicians are going to do that is what's happening. If their patients start leaving them and they go to doctors with voices, then those who their patients are leaving will find a voice.
And the
okay.
federal government is
but
trying to shut down those doctors who support
patients. Don't let
patients.
The federal government ruin your life. You have to stand up. The federal government is supposed to be for you. You're not supposed to be for the federal government. And if you're silent and let the federal government get away with stuff like in Texas, I heard today where now you can't get an abortion even if you've been raped or a product of incest. You don't sit back and say, oh, well, now we can't get an abortion, boo-hoo. You fight, particularly if you're a woman. You fight. And if you're a doctor, you fight. If you're an African-American doctor, you should fight with everything that you have. Don't accept what the government is doing and sit around and cry and whine about it. You fight back. And that's what you're doing, Dr. Tynes. You're fighting back, but you've got to enlist other black physicians to come along with you. This is a battle that you can't win fighting by yourself, but you've got to fight back.
Thank you so much. Let's go on to Dr. Jewel L. Crawford, MD. Dr. Crawford is a family physician who is now working in public health. Dr. Crawford is also an assistant professor in the Department of Community Health and Preventive Medicine at Morehouse School of Medicine in Atlanta, Georgia. Dr. Crawford is a native New Yorker and graduate of Howard University College of Medicine. She received her undergraduate degree from Stanford University. Following her medical training, she studied herbal medicine, nutrition, and alternative medicine at the National College of Naturopathic Medicine in Portland, Oregon. She is the past co-chair of the National Medical Association Community Medicine and Public Health Section and recently co-hosted the Section's National Conference. Welcome, Dr. Crawford.
Thank you, Dr. Lee. Thanks again for having me. I was just listening to the discussion, and however people view it, fortunately, unfortunately, or whatever, most doctors go along with the whole vaccine thing. They don't look into alternatives. They're not really looking at long-term effects because they're more concerned with the immediate situation. So, and they're just turning a blind eye to the adverse effects. So that's the majority of physicians. It's not all of them, but it's most. What I wanted to say was something about religious exemptions, and there are religious exemptions to the vaccine are allowed under and for the workplace. And I can read something to you. Federal law allows vaccine exemption for employees based on religious belief under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission confirmed this exemption in May 2021. So this is what it says. Federal EEO laws do not prevent an employer from requiring all employees physically entering the workplace to be vaccinated for COVID-19, so long as employees comply with the reasonable accommodation provisions of the ADA, American Disabilities Act, and Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, and other EEO considerations. So I think that under that, if you have a religious exemption, you can assert your right to religious accommodations under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, which prohibits discrimination against a sincerely held religious belief, practice, or observance. So, and the other thing is that the vaccine that they're given out, they've done something very tricky because they're still using the Pfizer-BioNTech, and that Pfizer-BioNTech is still under emergency use authorization. Now, they have another vaccine, which they say can be used interchangeably with that one, with the FDA is saying this, when they approve. The vaccine that they approved is not the one that they've been using, is what I'm trying to say. So
okay.
It's the other one's called Comirnaty or something like that. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. Comirnaty. And that's the one that's approved. And they're saying that they can use them interchangeably. But they don't have that much of it, and they're still using the Pfizer, which is under the emergency use. So if people get it, they have to look and see what's the name of it. And if it says Pfizer BioNTech, that's still under emergency use, and you really can't mandate anybody take that. And if it says Comirnaty, then that's the one that's authorized, but you can still get a religious exemption for that. So, so just FYI, you can see if you can get an exemption based on your belief system. That might be one way for people that where it's mandated and they don't want to get it. So I just wanted to add that.
Thank you so much. Let's. I do want to ask Dr. Long, if you're here, would you speak up? We tried to find your number, so if you will just say something, hopefully we might hear you.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can. Well, hello. Welcome.
Yeah. Hi. Yeah, I've been on the call, you know, since we started, and I want to offer my condolences to the loss of your brother, Dr. Mary Lee, and wishing health to everyone on the call tonight. You know, the only thing I want to offer, and I've listened to everybody's presentation, and I guess I can offer a scenario. You know, as most of you know, I work in a juvenile detention facility. At least close to 70 hours a week. But I do have a private practice, and I thought it was an interesting scenario today as it relates to, you know, the topic of medications during COVID, et cetera. Now, as a psychiatrist, and I always wonder with my other colleagues in different areas of medicine why they don't obtain consent for everything. So in psychiatry, you have to have a consent to even talk to someone. So let alone talking to them, you have to have consents for medications, any type of procedure. So I was just thinking today as you guys were talking, you know, earlier today downtown, for whatever reason, Wednesday seems to be the time where we get a lot of readmissions for kids who may have been discharged maybe a week ago, month ago, with similar scenarios. Today happens to be the return of a lot of African-American girls who have entered, either knowingly or not knowingly, sex trafficking. So, you know, they come in and, you know, we're dealing with that situation. And, of course, you know, you're dealing with their probation officers, DHS workers, et cetera, and parents. And it's just interesting that at no time does the conversation of COVID-19 ever come up, primarily because they're dealing with homelessness, they're dealing with issues with parents, they're trying to figure out, well, who is a typical trafficker. So a lot of things a little bit different, such that, again, COVID never comes up. And I'll say since COVID, you know, first appeared back in 2019, yeah, we've had some cases down in that environment with kids testing positive, and, you know, we put them in quarantine and things like that. We also had, and I mentioned this on previous shows, five of our what's known as JDS staff die from COVID, and across the street from our facility is the Wayne County Jail. We've had actually two psychiatrists die and a nurse practitioner from COVID. Now, I compare that and contrast that with where I'm calling from today, which is why this number is kind of odd. I'm calling from my private office where the scenario is a close to 80-year-old woman who I've been trying to convince who, that she has depression and the beginning of dementia for over 18 months. So, again, you know, in psychiatry, again, compliance, competency, all those are daily with us, particularly with adults. Yet the unique situation with this case is that this woman is also dealing with the death of her husband, who died, unfortunately, due to the consequences of COVID while in a nursing home, a little bit over 16 months ago. So, you know, the thing I want to provide is that, you know, first of all, downtown and even with mental health in general, whether it's vets, adults, et cetera, honestly, COVID never really comes up. It hardly ever comes up because people are dealing with other things as a result of poverty, racism, et cetera, where it's just, it very seldom enters their mind, you know, despite the Delta variant. So, but in terms of the topic tonight, in terms of, you know, what are some new medicines or what do I have at my disposal? honestly, there's nothing new, and because my approach is always trying to educate people about whatever they think they're going through. So like this close to 80-year-old woman tonight, you know, and fortunately she has her two adult kids. One is a professional. Well, they're both professional, and they're in healthcare, who I can spend the time explaining to them, since they're there supporting her, as to what their mother's symptoms are, whether it's depression and whatever, you know, people have, whatever their belief or definition of depression is. There's no two. The two is me, actually. You know, I consider myself as being the two in terms of providing education, insight that will hopefully lead to some form of treatment, compliancy, and then in the case of depression anyway, you know, I said, well, now you're off this medication, so your treatment is done. So I guess with my presentation tonight is, number one, you know, in psychiatry, we have to get consents for everything. So individuals, whether or not they want to take the medicines that we typically use, whether they're antidepressants, antipsychotics, whatever, I can't give anybody anything until they sign a consent, and they must be competent. Now, there are some situations where competency is the issue. Lo and behold, I'd say 80% of the cases dealing with that, unfortunately, are adults who've lost custody of their kids due to substance abuse, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, racism, poverty, et cetera. But again, even in that case, COVID has not come up in any discussion. Even though I'll have to bring it up in terms of their medical history, it never comes up. As far as it relates to working downtown or working anywhere, you know, most of you all know that I did get the Pfizer vaccine when it was first brought out December in the secondary medication, the second vaccine in January. And we're supposed to get the booster, that's what's been discussed. And my reasons for doing that are a lot of, you know, they can go back and forth and whether or not it's right or wrong, but, and I know the stats out there, you know, kids aren't presenting with it. They're presenting with the typical things that have been inundated in our community forever. Poverty, racism, lack of access to care. So you couple that with trying to explain to individuals what depression is, what bipolar depression is, what schizophrenia is. How do you petition a loved one who needs treatment for schizophrenia? You know, that's pretty much a 24-hour day for me. So does COVID enter the discussion? Yes, but on a very low presentation. So that's pretty much it, what I have tonight.
Thank you so much, Dr. Long. Dr. Davis, are you there? Can you speak up?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
great.
I'm here. Hi,
okay,
how are you, Dr. Mary Lee?
I'm doing good. Thank you. And under everything that's going on. But Dr. Davis is MD, MPD, is professor of microbiology and anatomy and physiology, former pandemic flu coordinator, and working with the Childhood Lead Poisoning Prevention Program for the City of Detroit Health Department, striving to increase the number of minority physicians by being a member of Wayne State University's School of Medicine, a postbaccalaureate admissions committee. Okay, Dr. Davis, the floor is yours.
Yeah. You know, thank you, Dr. Mary Lee. You know, I just bring to the floor in terms of saying that this coronavirus, COVID-19, has brought to the forefront how systemic racism has been really prevalent in our community. And the way that this coronavirus has brought it to the forefront is showing that systemic racism has actually been a causative factor for our community actually having more impact in a lot of diseases, but especially diseases like this coronavirus. because, and when I say that is our body's own immune systems help fight off different diseases, disease processes. And so throughout history, we've seen that, well, in minority communities, in low-income communities, we have higher incidence of diabetes, higher incidence of cancer, higher incidence of hypertension, higher incidence of all these different things. And then when we look at something like this coronavirus, it brings to light why some of these things are. Because, see, our body's own immune systems help fight off a lot of disease processes. And so, and when you look at the immune system, you look and say, what is it that helps build your immune system? How do you develop, how do you get to the place where you have compromised immune system? And there's a few things that can be done to build your own immunity. And so when you look at the things that we can do to build your own immunity, you look at in our communities, one is, you know, you have to eat right. You have to eat right, take the supplements, the vitamins, different supplements that I'm sure that's already been discussed in terms of the supplements that you can take. And eating right and taking the correct supplements and vitamins will help to shore up your immune system. And if you don't do that, then your immune system gets compromised. It doesn't build up as well as it could. And so when you look at our communities, when you look at how many Coney Islands are in every other corner in the city of Detroit, you don't see Coney Islands in Bloomfield and Farmington Hills, and that's our community eats a lot of fast foods, does not eat well-rounded, well-balanced. And so in our communities, we have suppressed immune system because of our nutrition. And another thing that we can control is how much sleep. When you actually rest and get sleep, then your body's able to build up and not only regenerate. People know in terms of muscles and how you can regenerate, but it also regenerates and builds up your immune system. When you don't get enough sleep, then it's like your immune system gets compromised. You get into an immunosuppressed state because the immune system doesn't have the time to actually build up and regenerate and renew. And so how that ties in with systemic racism is, okay, we're in this society where we're constantly working 2-3 jobs or working a full-time job and working multiple side jobs in our communities just to make ends meet. And so we typically do not get the rest that we need in our communities. And the third thing that we can kind of control is reduce the level of stress. Stress attacks our bodies in so many different ways. Everyone knows, okay, you get under a lot of stress, you can have peptic ulcer. And it's been documented that you can have cardiovascular illness from increased stress can increase the atherosclerosis and all these different components in our body, but a lot of people don't realize that increased stress suppresses the immune system. And so now when you talk about a minority community in the United States, how much stress is every day are we under that is unnecessary? How many times do we look over our shoulder, we see a police car on the pulling out behind us, and we're like, okay, I'm going to get my driving while black ticket. You know, it's like the law enforcement that is there to actually protect us, a lot of times we look over our shoulders and wonder why they're out to get us. And so stress is all around us in our community. Now, that is a factor that causes us to have suppressed immune systems, and then everyone looks and wonders why a lot of disease processes run rampant through our communities. And so when I look at it, I say, well, we need to get to some of the root cause and get to some of the underlying causative features and factors. But until we actually do, till we get to the root cause, we need to take this seriously and say, well, even if we decide we don't want to get vaccinated, we have to take it seriously and say this is something that is running through our community and it's giving people severe illness. People are dying from it. And so we need to do what we can. And so that, at this point, is we need to make sure that we don't touch our face with unwashed hands. If you're in a group of people, to actually wear a mask so that you do not get, infection from other people. And there's a number of things. Wash your hands before you eat or do anything like touching your face. And to so take the precautions, because it still is out here, and it's actually starting to ramp up. It's ramping up among a community that is suppressed, immunocompromised, and especially among the unvaccinated community, it's really ramping up and starting to really take hold. And so we need to pull our boot by the straps, and we need to say, mm-hmm. what do we need to do to make sure we mm-hmm. stay protected? And so in our community, we need to get that education out. It's that we need to take the bull by the horn, and we need to do the things we need to do to be protected.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Uh-huh. Yes, I don't go anywhere. We're about getting ready to start wrapping up. But before we do, I do want each one of our medical doctors, team, starting with Dr. Tyne. Then we want to go to Dr. Crawford and our Dr. Davis, Dr. Long, Dr. Moncrief. We want to talk about treatment. You know, someone gets the virus, and some of the things that we can do, and ask the our physicians for to help, because there are life-saving treatments out here, and they're not we're not educated in our communities. They don't tell us about them. They're very different. There are treatment centers. Also, you know, throughout the country, you know, before you even, you know, go to ER or be admitted into the hospital. So who did I say we're going to start with? And then after that, then we're going to go to back to Michael, Dr. Cannon, and Annetta, our co-host, for statements or questions. To wrap it up, but this is very important information. So why don't you get a pen and paper so that you can write down some of the things that you can do, medicines that you can ask for. Dr. Tyne.
Dr. Lee, this is Dr. Crawford. I'm going to have to go. So
You go first. No, go first.
Okay.
Go. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Well, what I would like the audience to know is if they do test positive, if they have an underlying chronic condition, and Dr. Tyne and one of the other physicians can say what the criteria is, and a lot of our people do have underlying chronic conditions, they can request the monoclonal antibodies. But that has to be done early on for it to be most effective, not late in the course of the disease. And also the convalescent plasma for hospitalized patients, and some of my colleagues can go into more detail than that. But, you know, there's also, you know, at that point, what I would also add is that they have a positive test, start taking high doses of vitamin C, make sure you're taking 2,000 a day of vitamin D, not more than 30 or 40 milligrams a day of zinc. And I know Dr. Tynes also uses quercetin with his patients, and I'm not sure the dose on that, so he can add that in. And you get your essential oils, eucalyptus, oil of oregano, put it in a diffuser. If you don't have a diffuser, just boil some water, put it in a pot, put a towel over your head, breathe it in, and do the self-care things as soon as you can. There are antiviral herbs that people can look up that may also be helpful. One is a long name. It's called Andrographis. Very bitter herb. They use it in China and Thailand to fight the COVID. And that's something else that people can also do at home. But that they can get that online or at a health food store, just like it sounds. Andro, A-N-D-R-O, Graphis, like you write, G-R-A-P-H-I-S. It's a longer name, but that's enough to know to get it. So those are things that people can start doing for themselves as soon as they get it. Because if you don't have those vitamins, you know, so many people are nutrient deficient, and they're really sitting ducks. And then the other thing I always say is, if you're diabetic, you've got to control that blood sugar. Hypertensive, you've got to control the blood pressure. And take, you know, if you're asthmatic, take your asthma meds. In other words, control your underlying conditions as best you can. Don't let those get out of hand, and try to manage your stress. So if you do get a positive test, time is not on your side. So do those things right away, because the goal is to manage it at home and stay out of the hospital, not let it progress to the point where you have to be hospitalized. And most people don't have to go to the hospital. Most people get over it. So that's doable, but those are the things that you have to do to try and stay out of the hospital. Again, do it right away. So if you feel sick, run out, get a COVID test. If it's positive, you know, do those things that I laid out so that you can try your best to stay out of the hospital. Stay prayed up. That helps too. Okay, thank you, Dr. Lee. And again, you have my condolences on the loss of your brother.
Yes, everybody. Dr. Lee may have dropped off. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Beautiful.
I'm still here.
Yes, we can hear you.
Beautiful.
Okay.
Dr. Lee may have just dropped off, but as she comes back in, you know, some real hard.
Oh, can you hear me? Oh, here I am. I'm sorry about that.
Beautiful.
I'm here.
She's back, everybody.
Okay, I'm here. Thank you so much. I'm sorry. Okay, things happen around here for sure. Thank you so much, Dr. Crawford.
All right, thank you. And everybody have a good evening and stay
good
safe.
Right,
stay well.
Too.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay, thank
I know,
you.
Yep, I know Dr. Hayden will have the last word, but okay. So here's the stuff to write down a little bit, and I can give this to Dr. Lee. I would have done it. This is the medical guideline in terms of how a real doctor, a physician, a real one, is supposed to treat. This is in the medical journals, and this was the standard of care that's supposed to happen that's not happening. I have to make two comments real quick. One, requesting monoclonal antibodies is a fight. Requesting convalescent plasma is a fight. The remove convalescent plasma is just being brought back because Johns Hopkins is doing a study, and in medicine, it was so dishonest, so disingenuous that people lied. They lied in the Lancet Medical Journal that hydroxychloroquine didn't work. When it did work, they had to pull the article, and, you know, that made the New York Times. So in terms of trusting that, the doctors would be so stooped down so low to, you know, support money or government, that type of thing. So hydroxychloroquine does work. The convalescent plasma did work. They said it didn't work, but what happens is people lied, and now Johns Hopkins is going back over the studies, and so convalescent antibodies is back on the scene again. They have not, the CDC, FDA have not put hydroxychloroquine back on the scene, even though hydroxychloroquine is used as standard treatment in Africa, and Africa has less than a 0.1% death rate from COVID with the use of hydroxychloroquine, so that battle is still going on. So in the United States, if you have the COVID-19, this is medical information, write it down. So doctors, write it down.
If you have COVID, you do self-quarantine, you do contact tracing, you do contagion control, and you make sure what people are not doing, ventilate your house, make sure you're getting fresh air in there to ventilate your house. Now, I'm not going to get too technical, but bottom line, you have people who are less than 50, people greater than 50, and if they have an illness like a diabetes or something else going on, that's like a more urgent scenario. But everybody else, if you just have one kind of thing going on and you're around 50 and a little bit overweight, what we call a BMI of 30, or have lung disease or diabetes or heart disease, kidney disease, and some cancer, then you need to go into the treatment, and actually that Dr. Crawford kind of related to. But I've made it very simple. In Benton Harbor, we're able to get the ingredients and a complete multivitamin, a woman's complete multivitamin or a men's complete multivitamin, three of those multivitamins a day, and then you get 1,000 milligrams, three of those a day, which is 3,000 milligrams, coenzyme Q10, at least a minimum of 200, the Q-Certain, which is Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, again, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, that Q-Certain, it's 500 milligrams twice a day for like 30 days, 5 to 30 days, but I mainly use that in my thin, frail geriatric senior citizens. But in the complete multivitamin, you get all the zinc that you need, and you'll be fine. If you start going over 50 milligrams of zinc, it will cause you to have spasms and cramps, so do not try to do a zinc overdose. Next, you're supposed to be able to get an outpatient infusion of the monoclonal antibody. So the first-line treatment is actually preventative treatment with monoclonal antibodies. So I'm going to spell them. You write them down. Spell them. I'm going to write them down. Here we go. B-A-M-L-A-N. L-V-I-M-A-B. I'll repeat that one more time. I heard a noise, so I'm going to do it again. BAM. So B-A-M-L-A-N-L-V-I-M-A-B. Next one in the same family. C-A-S I-R-I-V I-M-A-B. Again, C-A-S I-R-I-V I-M-A-B. And that's given with I-M-D-E V-I-M-A-B. That's given with I-M-D-E-V-I-M-A-B. That's what you're going to fight for when you go in when you're an outpatient and you've been diagnosed and you're feeling symptoms and you're not short of breath enough to go to the hospital. That's the monoclonal outpatient treatment for you. Next, this is what the care was that I did in 2020 that they shut down and didn't allow me to do. In 2020, I gave HCQ, which is hydroxychloroquine, 200 milligrams twice a day. And I did that really for a week. And I did that in conjunction with, well, actually I did it like 2 weeks, to be honest with you. I did it 2 weeks, hydroxychloroquine, because that was 14 days. And I gave azithromycin, which is called a Z-Pack. So Z-P-A-C-K, azithromycin Z-Pack, which is 250 milligrams. The only difference was that back then we did it as a five-day regimen, but the New York regimen, the Texas regimen, was for 250 milligrams twice a day. And they did that for a week or more, depending on the symptoms. And if you didn't have access to the azithromycin, then you would use the old drug doxycycline. DOXY is a short name for it, 100 milligrams twice a day. So that would be, that's the treatment that I was exposed to and that we use, and every patient I use it on is still alive today. Now, out towards Texas in the south in that area, they use the azithromycin, the doxycycline. Instead of using hydroxychloroquine, they had the opportunity to use a medicine called ivermectin. IVM, yeah. And it's based on using it to 6 milligrams per kilogram, and you would do that, well, on the average it would be 6 to 24 milligrams every other day or for 5 days in a row or 5 doses. That's more complicated. So the ivermectin, I'm going to ask people to hold off on that because what's happening in Michigan, you can get this from the pet shop. So you can get it from a farm and family because it's given to you to deworm your animals. But it's a weight-based product. Now, some of the fancier people, they're able to get a medicine called Favipiravir. Favipiravir, I repeat, Favipiravir. And that's 1,800 milligrams twice a day. Your load was 600. That's more fancy. But then we go back to the mainstay of azithromycin or doxycycline. Doxycycline is also good to treat when you get bit by insects in your garden and stuff like that, and can develop a rash. So that's a good drug. Now, major breakthrough. A simple medicine called dubenesinide, which is like a Symbicort, they found that was very helpful when people became short of breath, that dubenesinide as an outpatient is tremendous in helping to allow people to breathe. So that's a simple, regular, unrestricted drug. You can nebulize it. There's also the puffer. The standard, everybody puts you on prednisone, but what you need to know is that colchicine, 0.6 milligrams twice a day of colchicine, the major study was done and it's found to help or decrease the morbidity, mortality associated and symptomatology associated with COVID. So regular colchicine that you use for gout, anti-inflammatory, instead of using the ibuprofen, which was kind of a bit harmful for some of the coaching, a little bit different, that using that will also be very helpful. Last part is going to be dealing with, you're going to really need to work with the doctor on this part, because COVID is a blood clotting disease. COVID is a blood clotting disease, what we call thrombosis. The white fluffy clouds that you see is not infection, but actually blood, and that not 81 milligrams aspirin, but 325 milligram aspirin. If you have a positive COVID test, if there's one thing that you're going to do, if you don't want to do anything else, put yourself on a 325 milligram aspirin. That's a full strength aspirin, and you want to kind of do that. Some people I've had to put on, because they got the vaccine, not COVID, but COVID also does the same thing, that I had to put them on heparin, which is a blood thinner. But if if they get the vaccine and they get short of breath, I put them on a medicine called Xarelto or Apixaban, which is Apixaban. Apixaban. There's more that's out there. There's one, Rivaroxaban, which is Rivaroxaban. Those are some super platelet. Well, they work on factor 10. They help to treat clotting. That is the medical treatment. That is the standard that doctors are not doing. That's in the medical journal. This is the care that you're supposed to receive when you go in the hospital, and this is not being done. But this is in the medical journal. That's Dr. Peter McCullough, capital M, little c, capital C, U-L-L-O-U-G-H. That protocol is a multi-drug protocol that's been used to save lives. Only thing that substitute is the ivermectin that we talked about. So I'll turn it over to the next speakers. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Tyne. Okay, well, Dr. Moncrief?
Yeah.
Kind of. Okay, thank you.
Okay, yep. Real quick, as an outpatient, not necessarily another medication, I think Dr. Tyne's list is very, very good. But as an outpatient diagnosed with COVID positive, stay active as much as you can. Don't go to bed. Don't, you know, lay down and the illness take control of you. Make yourself get up and walk. And if you have to lay down, lay prone. What is prone? Lay on your stomach as much as you can. Don't lay on your back. If you never slept on your stomach before, this is the time for you to sleep on it, on your stomach. And then when you go out and invest $30 and buy you one of those oxygen saturation monitors. If you test COVID positive, go out and pay $30 and go to the CVS, the Rite Aid, and get you an O2 saturation monitor, oxygen saturation monitor. What you do is you put that monitor on your finger and you make sure that your saturations are 90 or above. They really should be around normally. They should be 98, 96 and above, okay? But if you have COVID, make sure that your saturations are staying at 90 or above. Even if you feel fine and you see your saturations dipping down into the 80s, you go to the emergency room right away. Don't wait. The oxygen saturation monitor is just like buying a blood pressure cuff for home, but it helps monitor the oxygenation in your blood. If your oxygen goes down less than 90, you go to the emergency room right away. Call your doctor on the way there and let them know that you're there. When you getting those monoclonal antibodies is essential. You beg if you have to. You beg to get them as an outpatient if you have to. If you're black, you're going to have to beg. Okay? You get them within the first 10 days. I don't care if you've gotten the vaccine or have not gotten the vaccine. They're going to tell you if you got the vaccine, then you don't really need the monoclonal antibodies. That's a bunch of bull, okay? If you become COVID positive when you got the vaccine, act like you had not gotten the vaccine. Demand the monoclonal antibodies. Get them within the first 10 days. The earlier you get them, the better. Check your O2 sat, monoclonal antibodies, and get on steroids. The only two things that have been shown to decrease the mortality associated with COVID are steroids and monoclonal antibodies. You miss out on them, you're in trouble. They put you on Decadron as an outpatient or prednisone, but you get your behind on some steroids. If you have to become an inpatient, you get in there and you get fighting. Again, demand that they put you in those prone positions. Demand the medications that Dr. Tynes had tried to get you to take before you got into the hospital. Demand to get chest percussions. They don't want to give you the aerosol nebulizing treatments because they say that releases the virus out into the universe, okay? But you can use the inhalers, okay? You can use the inhalers. To demand things from that point on. When you get into the hospital, you demand care. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Moncrief. Appreciate your being here tonight. Dr. Davis?
Yeah, I'm still here. All
okay.
Right.
Do you want to say your final thoughts?
There's a lot of great information. And so with me, I'd like to emphasize trying to get to the place where we don't catch it, where you actually don't touch your face with unwashed hands. It's like you actually wear a mask when you're in group settings and to, you know, and like Dr. Moncrief was saying and Dr. Tynes was saying, it's like take it seriously if you are positive, especially if you have any underlying health conditions. Even if it looks like, man, I don't need to be hospitalized, it should be okay, because 98% of the people don't have to go to the hospital. But they found great efficacy with those people that don't have to be hospitalized, but they do get the monoclonal antibody treatment. And as Dr. Moncrief was saying, they're not going to offer it up to you, because what they'll tell you is, or what they're thinking is, we don't have a whole lot of it, so we need to make sure we have enough for those people that we want to have it. So you have to fight for it. You have to tell them, no, this is a modality that has shown to be effective, and I want it, even if you don't look like you have any severe symptoms. Because once you have severe symptoms and you have to be hospitalized, they say, oh, you can't get monoclonal, because we find it's not as effective for hospitalized patients that are severely ill. So be very conscientious about your treatment, and don't just expect them to do what's best for you. Just last week, I had a friend of mine's brother called me, and he had been in the hospital for 3 weeks now. And then they finally, he told, I don't know the brother, but he had the brother give me a call, and it was like I could barely hear him. He was, and he said he'd been in there 3 weeks, and so I talked to the nurse. He came in, and he was definitely have underlying health conditions, unvaccinated, 47 years old, and he was definitely should have had monoclonal antibodies, but they didn't give it to him because he didn't have. And I said, well, did you give him convalescent plasma therapy? And they said, well, we started it, but then we stopped. And I'm like, well, why'd you stop? And they said, well, the supply is kind of limited. Oh, that infuriated me. I was so upset. And then they said, and now it's too late. He's 3 weeks into it. He's on 100% non-rebreather. We're doing everything possible. If his sats drop into the 80s again with him like he is, we're just going to intubate him. He's already in the ICU. They're sitting there ready to intubate him. He's just progressively getting worse. And I'm sitting there like, and you stopped the treatment? Why again? And they said, well, it's limited supply. And that told me exactly what you know, they were trying to say. It's like, well, right. He's a black male, and there's plenty of other people that are more deserving that we're going to give it to so that they don't get into the ICU. So I just say that story, and that's something that's going on right now, him in the hospital, and they're saying that. So we can't give it to him now because it's not going to help him. And they're right currently, but that's, I want to emphasize what Dr. Moncrief is saying, what Dr. Kynes is saying, what Dr. Merrilee is getting out to the public, is that you have to take the initiative, first off, to keep from getting it, but then if you get it, act very aggressively and, you know, and demand some of the treatment modalities that we've been talking about. All right. Thank you very much for this time, Dr. Merrilee.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate you. Dr. Longs, are you still with us tonight? Okay, we go to Dr. Hayden. You'll be our last guest speaker tonight. Dr. Hayden.
Thank you. This has been very informative, and I hope that something that one of us has said has helped someone along the way. Not being a medical doctor, I cannot give any medicine recommendations. But what I can say is, once again, I didn't have COVID. I survived an entire year with washing my hands, social distancing, masking up. Still doing that even though I'm vaccinated. Should you choose to get the vaccination and you happen to have adverse side effects, Dr. Tyne knows that I am doing active research, so the information that I'm stating is research data on real people, but a lot of people are presenting with GBS, which is Guillain-Barré syndrome, TM, which is transverse myelitis, BSS, Brown-Séquard syndrome. Lots of neurological issues that I can't even start to give names to. But if you have any paralysis, any paresthesia is numbness. If you feel like if they never wake back up, you are having an effect. At the hospital, you may not get any type of information, but you have to be your own advocate. You have to require that they take care of you. With the four diagnoses that they were looking at for me, the top thing that needed to happen for me was to get me moving. After 5 days after I came out of my shock, I started doing my own research, found that out, and started raising my voice. It took 17 days to get me on my feet. And I pray to God that we weren't 14 days late for me to come to full recovery. And getting me on my feet didn't require anything that they didn't already have. I had to fight to get them to get to moving me so that I could hopefully reverse what was going on within my body. You have to be your own advocate. If you need information, there are several Facebook groups out there. Google vaccine injury, and you'll get to places that can help you. You can contact me, and I can put you in contact with people. With that, I just hope everybody and wish everyone much success in their health in terms of what's going on with this pandemic and what we do just personally in our lives to keep ourselves healthy, wealthy, and wise. Thank you.
You're welcome, and thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you for being with us.
Yes, Dr. Merrily, yes. Can I just ask Dr. Tynes to just speak on the taking of the teas and how much tea that people should be taking to prevent COVID and if they become COVID positive?
Yes, go ahead. Dr. Tynes.
Okay, Dr. Marcus, you could answer that question. What happened in China, to be honest with you, it's almost 12 times a day you're supposed to take hot teas, and when they couldn't have tea, they actually drank hot water. What I did, I asked people to go anywhere from 4 to 8 times a day of drinking hot teas, hot water. The virus seems not to like that. It helps to thin the mucus out. So any type of hot water, hot tea is to be effective. Dr. Moncrief is right. There's a lot of stuff that she also should tell you that we do the glove up, or if you have people drop off stuff, take the don't touch the stuff when you have them do the DoorDash, stuff like that. Use gloves, bring it in your house, put it in something different to try to avoid the contact because of how long it can last on cardboard, but only lasts maybe like 8 hours on cardboard, but it can last up to 96 hours on plastic and metal and glass up to 72 hours. So you want to be careful when you go out. So don't touch and bring it home, making sure that you drink a lot of hot fluids, avoid dairy, avoid cold products as much as possible. Avoid ibuprofen, nonsteroidals, those things, except colchicine. Those seem to cause a little bit of a problem. Making sure you sleep on your stomach. Making sure that you walk around a lot because the virus want to make you lay down to get you ready for a coffin. The virus want to make you lay down to get you ready for a coffin. It makes you want to just stay in the bed so you get ready for a cemetery. It makes you want to stay in the bed so you get ready for the cemetery. So you have to get up and force yourself to move to generate that oxygen, and the pulse ox that she told you about, you know, is actually cheaper than that to just keep monitoring. And if it goes down, tell your doctor to check a D dimer, D-dimer, D dimer. If your pulse ox go down, because then you may need one of those medicines to help thin the blood out, or you get that 325 milligram aspirin. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so we're over to our co-host, Annetta, Dr. Cannon, and then Michael, you will take us off air tonight. Do we have Annetta? Okay, Dr. Cannon. Okay, so I'm gonna say thank you. I appreciate you all for joining us again. Phone number 571-998-1964 for any information that you would like to receive from any of our speakers tonight. So we're going to go to Michael to take us off air tonight.
Till we eat.
Pardon me?
Until you eat. Till you eat.
Okay.
I think we might need to need some background noise.
Okay, working on it. Mike, okay, let's see. Okay, go ahead, Michael. Thank you all.
I actually had a question for the medical experts on the panel before we sign off, just one I could throw in.
Okay.
Would there be any way to kind of summarize in 3 points or less, you know, what people should take away from this? You know, speaking directly to the medical professionals on the line, if there are still any on the line, like 3 points you can give people if maybe, you know, a lot of the information was over their head that they can take away that can help them. That's for any of the medical professionals.
Okay, Dr. Don, are you on? Okay, let's see.
Yes, hello, let me give 3 points. I'm going to have everybody turn it on. So one, the point that I've gave on a national level is one, that we have to be pro-choice. Dr. Moncrief emphasized, have to be pro-choice. It's your choice what you do or don't do with your body, what you take or don't take. So pro-choice, number one. Next one is pro-informed consent. You really have to know what's going on. The media has been lying, holding back information, been doing intimidation. So you really need to know what vaccines are available, what's in your vaccine, what are the side effects of it, like with any other drug. You want to know what the drug is, and you want to know what the benefits are, and you want to know what the side effects are. That has not been the case when it came to the vaccines. That information is being withheld. The third part that I can walk is that you're pro-HIPAA. Pro-HIPAA means that it's none of anybody business or none of anybody damn business what you do with your body, what you take or don't take, so you don't post your medical information on social media, you don't post your medical information in the news or any place else. Private information is private. Once you give it up, it's private. If you post your COVID shot, that means you got to post your shot when you got it for gonorrhea. You got to post your shot when you got it for syphilis. You got to post your shot when you were checking your IV medications, or you got to put your pelvic exam on Facebook as well. So keep your personal information private. It's none of anybody's damn business, your business or whoever, of what it is. Only time it becomes an issue if you have something that's infectious and contagious that if you don't want to isolate from, then that's the only time you can say that, hey, I got something and I want to do it. It's only restricted information, restricted personnel who should know your information because it directly affects the company or like a health situation. So those are my 3 points, pro-choice, pro-informed consent, and pro-HIPAA. Thank you.
Someone else was also trying to speak at the same time. Thank you, Dr. Tynes. Do we have another doctor still on?
Well, this is Dr. Davis.
Dr. Davis.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And so
okay.
I'd say the three takeaways that I appreciate, and Dr. Tynes is front line. And he is, as he said, his record speaks for him. You know, when he talks about his patients not actually having severe illness and not dying from it. And so the 3 points I'd emphasize is in terms of, once again, it's like pro-choice. It's like you make your own choice whether you want to take the vaccine or not. But if you don't take the vaccine, then I suggest that you do follow the protocol where you wear a mask if you're among, other people, that you actually don't touch your face with unwashed hands, and that you, you do the things that are recommended to protect you and your family. And then the other thing that I'd recommend is early on, if you feel bad, early on when you have symptoms, not when you have to be hospitalized, demand, the different modalities that are out there. The convalescent plasma therapy, the monoclonal antibodies, those are shown to be very effective. And people have to understand that especially in the minority communities, when you don't have a voice, that they won't give it to you because they say people that are more deserving, they need to have this for them. And more deserving, I put that in quotes, you know, because people that look like them, people that you know, are able to pay the bills better, you know, they need the monoclonal antibodies. They need the convalescent. And by the time we come around and say, hey, I'm getting really sick with this and I'm having to be hospitalized and I need a whole lot of oxygen, then they say, oh, you should have gotten this before you came to the hospital and it possibly could have helped. Now it can't help you. So a key point with me is, first off, protect yourself from getting it. And then if you do get it, act on it very quickly and early on. And then, so that's pretty much what I'd have to venture to say. And you know, so hopefully that kind of sums up my portion of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, Michael.
Absolutely. Yeah, so once again, I want to thank all of our guests listening for tuning into this installment of the show. I also want to thank our expert guests on the panel that we had come on tonight for sharing their insights and advice. That's greatly appreciated. I'm sure everyone tuned in has appreciated this conversation as well in our listening audience. And if you are in our listening audience and you'd like to support the show and keep it up and running and seeing all of us continuing to formulate substantive dialogues like this, then, you know, consider continually tuning in every Wednesday to support the show and keeping the interest there. You know, we're definitely going to do more discussions like this, I feel, probably in the future, and keep bringing the community the insights that we need to make more educated, informed decisions and see the positive effect of those educated, informed decisions in the community. So that's been the show for today, and that's all we have. Until next time, this has been Dr. Mary Lee. Good night.
Peace to the ancestors. Yes. Peace to Dr. Cornell West. Yes. Peace to the movement. Yes.
We came from the bottom. Ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob us, slang. Now we locked up again. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states, working your forms. Black nannies carrying white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your wars, but you'll never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong. You act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? You never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I wanna get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Get up, get up.
Worst case scenario, might work till a couple of quirks. Can't call it pancakes cause you pour some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the road is still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, racing dough. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland Security now, there's a phenomenon. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Troops still riding, still obliging, still no Bin Laden. Tuned in waiting for the president's announcement. No 40 acres. Take these 40 ounces. We ain't gon' get on the levees. Revolution televised early.
America,
is you ready?
Why you wanna treat me so cold? America, I done gave you all that I own. America, took me from my mama so young. America, locked me up and gave me your name.
When you steady being forced to climb instead of how you back, have you beat and lost your mind? Especially when you done been down for so much time. Getting up don't even really ever cross your mind. You got pawn shop, gun shop, liquor store sign. SWAT team, crack fiends, unemployed line. Stay late, dollar short, trying to buy time. What we do to survive is defined as a life of crime. You can't ball, then you force the grind. If you fall, then you cross the line. And I've been putting in work from 9 to 5 and 5 to 9. Since phone calls cost a dime, what it made me is one of the relevant, highly intelligent brothers not only dealing with the same drug selling. If I'm a hustler, then what's more American? We all founded on the same thug heritage.
America, why you wanna treat me so cold? America, I done gave you all that I own. America, took me from my mama so young. America, locked me up and gave me your name.
America, 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 you know the black freedom movement, constitution, moral conscious, you know we've been trying to redeem the soul. Even as that nation been trying to render us soulless, to wear our soulful people, the blues people. We've been keeping alive the same banner of democracy. Thank God for those who came before. We shall never forget them, and always